Welcome, everybody. Let me help you envision, explore, and execute your plans. This is Motivate Me, and I'm Lynette Renda. So much is going on today's show. Binge eating is one. Living a life with more meaning is another. Meet Dr. Glenn Livingston. Before we get started today, I just want to make sure you know you can go to motivatemepodcast.com, and there you're going to find our show notes, links to all of the resources mentioned. You'll find an application to be on the show. You'll have access to our email, and we can direct you to the Motivate Me Ultimate Support System Facebook page, because nothing matters more to me than to connect with my listeners. So I hope I can do that starting right now. Ladies and gentlemen, on today's show, we have Dr. Glenn Livingston, PhD. He's a psychologist who has a private practice and who has published all over the place, New York Times, LA Times, everywhere. He is also the chief executive officer at ICCA, which is International Coach Certification Alliance. So Dr. Glenn Livingston, before we get started today, I'd like to welcome you to the show.
I'm so excited to be here. Thank you.
You know, I have to tell you, I know that what we're going to talk about today is going to impact so many people. I'm going to be listening very closely myself, and I know there's going to be a lot of takeaways for everybody. So before we get started, is there a quote or a passage of some kind that's meaningful to you?
What I like to tell my clients is that all you need to do to never binge again is never binge again. All you need to do to never binge again is never binge again. And that's very meaningful to me because I spent so many years trying to clear away the muck and confusing messages in our culture about what was involved in getting yourself to stop overeating, stop binge eating. And I eventually realized that it was really a lot simpler than it was made out to be, and that all you need to do to never binge again is never binge again.
You know, sometimes the simplest ideas are the most meaningful. And I know that originally you and I had your wife on the show last week, and she does emotional marketing, right? And she's also a psychologist. And did you do that for a while as well, too?
Well, you know, we don't have kids and we don't commute, so we've got very depthful and varied careers. So yes, we partner in our consulting firm for large corporations, and we help them to understand the psychological reasons for purchase. And in part, that actually led me to the intense work that I've done to help people with their eating, because I saw what the food industry was doing to get people to eat more things that really weren't in their best interest and kind of fostered the addictive mentality.
That's exactly why I asked you this, because I just felt like your personal experience with your own issues with diet and then your work experience and being a psychologist, I felt like it kind of funneled you in this direction.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. I don't know where else I could have wound up. That's a good way to put it, yeah.
So I just want to know, what inspired you to take that next step?
Well, I mean, this is a little embarrassing, actually, but, you know, psychologists are supposed to really be the pillars of health and, you know, understand how to stop themselves from eating. And I wasn't. I really wasn't. I would be sitting with my clients and they'd be talking to me about such meaningful things. And I would sometimes be thinking, when is this going to be over so I can go get a whole pizza? Or, you know, gosh, that was a good donut I had before. And I felt really guilty about it, but I just couldn't stop thinking about food. And I, in my early life, was relatively thin and athletic because I love to exercise and I'm kind of a big guy, so I could get away with eating a lot. But as I got older and had more responsibilities, you know, kind of moving towards my late 20s and early 30s, I couldn't spend all that time exercising, but I still spent the same amount of time eating. And I still was thinking about food in the same way, and I slowly started to gain weight. And then I found that it's almost like something overtook me, like there was a process that overtook me, and I Maybe I was using it as an escape or something. I couldn't really figure out what was going on, but I was sure, you know, given my psychological background, I was sure it would be a deeply psychological reason. And, you know, long story short, I got to the point that I was 260 pounds and my triglycerides were 1100 and I was in a lot of trouble. And actually, I think the triglycerides were 898. But, you know, I had to do something about it. And the places that I turned for help were the traditional places that you'd think a psychologist would go, because I've got some of the best connections to the top doctors in New York. And then when that didn't work, I went to Overeaters Anonymous for a couple of years, and I just couldn't get it together. I mean, I lost some weight in Overeaters Anonymous, but I was still really felt like just one bite away from going nuts with food. And so I really felt compelled to figure it out. And I funded this large study to try to put together the connection between psychology and eating, and actually found some interesting things, Lynette, but they didn't help. I figured out that people that crave chocolate, like I do, I'm a big chocolate fiend, they tend to crave it when they feel lonely. And people that crave carbohydrates, pastas, breads, bagels, they tend to crave that when they're feeling really stressed. And people that crave salty chips and, you know, salty snacks and pretzels and things like that, they tend to crave that when they're feeling very anxious. And so I thought I really figured something out. I thought I figured out what could be a cure. And I would be talking to my patients, you know, someone would come in and was craving chocolate, and I said, well, we really need to focus on feelings of isolation and loneliness and, you know, feeling unloved and finding more intimacy in your life. And what would happen, which was the same thing that happened to me internally now in retrospect, is they would say, well, that makes a lot of sense. I am feeling lonely. So I guess I'm going to have to keep eating chocolate until I'm not lonely anymore. So it almost became like the psychological connection was an excuse. And what was really the problem was that crazy voice inside their head or inside my head that said, I'm going to keep eating chocolate until I'm not lonely. And that was the problem. It wasn't figuring out how to not be lonely, which is a good thing to do. I mean, it's a meaningful issue to work on, and something that I would encourage everyone who's feeling lonely to, you know, I think soulful exploration with a psychologist can be really helpful. But don't wait to fix the eating problem until you fix the loneliness, because it can go on forever. And as a matter of fact, the eating problem can create more loneliness.
Right, right.
Yeah. And so I started to zero in on that crazy voice. And around the same time, I was also looking for alternatives to Overeaters Anonymous. And I ran across a guy named Jack Trimpe at Rational Recovery. And he works with addicts for the more black and white addictions, for the most part, for alcohol and drugs and cigarettes and things like that, the kind of things that you can cut out of your life entirely. And he's got a methodology where he separates your addictive voice from your higher self. You know, it's kind of the classic angel and devil on your shoulders. And it's actually very, very effective for alcohol and drugs. And I if anybody's having trouble with alcohol or drugs, I'd highly recommend they go over and take a look at his site and just get in touch with his materials. But I tried to work with what he was doing for eating to figure out how to work with that crazy voice inside of me. And it didn't quite work, because eating is a very complex behavior. It kind of sort of worked, but eating is a very complex behavior that there are a lot of decisions you have to make throughout the day about food. It's not really just a yes or no decision.
And like you said, not only that, it's not like you can stop eating. Like, you can stop smoking, drinking, doing drugs, but you still have to eat.
You got to take the lion out of the cage and walk him around the block a few times a day. And the other thing is that it's more likely that people will make mistakes with food than it's actually possible to, you know, make a decision to be the kind of person that never drinks and really never drink again. That's entirely possible. And that's a lot of what they talk about at Rational Recovery. It's more difficult to do that with food, because there's so many decisions to make. And also in our culture, You know, if you drink too much in our culture, people understand when you quit. If you overeat in our culture and you start to eat healthier, people get a little bit mad, actually. It makes them uncomfortable.
No, you're right.
Right?
Yes.
I mean, like, when was the last time you went to a family Christmas dinner and just ate salad? It's
right.
It's, yeah, like what are you going to enjoy your rabbit food? And they kind of make jokes and you feel
well,
all this.
Yeah, and then they made you this food, so you feel obligated to eat it.
Yes. Yes, and we can talk about how to overcome that, by the way. So I had to make a lot of modifications and kind of develop my own methodology. And I'll give it to you in a nutshell. What actually worked for me and then started to work for my clients, and I call this coaching, by the way, so I call them clients rather than patients, because this is a little controversial and not necessarily in concert with what my profession would prescribe for people that are having difficulty with reading. Certainly not a treatment for an eating disorder. So I need to do it under the rubric of coaching and education as opposed to professional treatment.
Good point, good point.
What eventually worked for me was to make some clear lines in the sand and come up with a set of categories of food rules, which I think everyone needs to create their own. So I say you can make a rule that's a never rule, like I'll never have chocolate again. Or you can make a rule that's a conditional rule, which is that I will only have chocolate on weekends, or I'll only have chocolate at social events, or I will only eat pretzels at Major League Baseball games. You know, so if there are certain foods that are only troubles in certain conditions, why restrict it entirely? Life is about freedom and fun and satisfaction, and you know, let's not put in more stoplights and stop signs than we need to. Let's make it conditional if a conditional rule would really work. And then there could be always rules, like I always have 6 servings of fruit and vegetables every single day. And then there are unconditional, unrestricted rules also. And sometimes it helps people to specify, you know, I can have as many unsauced vegetables as I want to. I can have as much water as I want to during the day so that they feel unrestrained. And by setting up some crystal clear rules for yourself, you then know when you're on versus off your plan with 100% clarity. And that's really important to specify the rules with clarity. So like if 10 people were to follow you around all day, they would all agree whether you were on or off your plan, because the kind of fat thinking inner self, the overeating thinking inner self, which as a shorthand, I call the pig. I kind of wish I didn't call it the pig originally, because sometimes women object. They say, well, there's not a pig inside me, but it's what I called it. It's what I called it. And
well, because it's how you felt.
It's how I felt. And I originally did this with a lot of journaling and, you know, like I told you,
I can relate to what you're saying. Sometimes you just feel like a big fat pig.
I mean, I've got a pig inside me.
Right. And I gotcha.
Yeah. And it's not something I'm going to love back to health. It's something that I have to capture and cage and intimidate and dominate. And that pig will use twisted logic and everything at its disposal to talk me out of my best laid plans. Like, for example, when I said I will never have chocolate again, that pig, I remember as I was paying for my coffee at Starbucks and there was a big old chocolate bar staring at me at the counter while I was waiting to pay, it started to say to me, you know, Glenn, you're in this new diet that requires a lot of vegetables. And you know, chocolate is really from a cocoa bean, and a cocoa bean grows on a tree, and a tree is a kind of a plant, and therefore chocolate is a vegetable. Now that sounds absolutely ridiculous, you know, in retrospect, but it only has to make sense for a moment. And that's the problem. It only has to make sense for a moment. And if I have any ambiguity in my rules whatsoever, the pig will twist everything at the moment of impulse when we don't really have access to our best thinking. And the hungrier we are and the more delicious something is, the less access we have to our best thinking. So I really needed a rule that couldn't be questioned. Like I never eat chocolate. I know no circumstances whatsoever. I never eat chocolate. And so Lena, this is what I did. I made those rules and I said that I've got a pig inside me. And if I hear any voice whatsoever inside my head that suggests I will eat chocolate under any circumstances whatsoever, that's just the pig squealing for some pig slop. And I never eat pig slop and I don't listen to farm animals. So there's no point to going any further. It's a little embarrassing, but that's what worked.
Well, I mean, it's got to be whatever you connect to and what works for you. And I know even when I was talking to your wife, you know, she does a lot of that inner dialogue too. And I think recognizing your inner voice and having dialogue with that, it sounds to some people might be like, yeah, whatever, but everybody does it. I don't care. Everybody talks to themselves in that way, but they just... Usually it's so negative what they're saying to themselves that they don't even realize they're talking to themselves, right? Like, oh, you're such an idiot. Well, you're talking to yourself. You're talking to your inner voice, right?
And what you're doing is making a conscious and purposeful decision to separate your best thinking from your worst thinking and to begin to ignore your worst thinking. That's really what you're doing. We all know that there's not a pig inside of us, right? We're not crazy people. But you're making a conscious and purposeful decision to separate the thinking from your worst thinking. And in the context of the culture in which we live, where it's legal for the food industry to put as many calories in as small a space as possible, remove the vitamins and minerals, emphasize the packaging to make it look delicious, and put billions of dollars behind advertising to start programming us when we're children. I heard of a study where the average child is exposed to at least 5,000 television commercials about food per year, and not one of them is about fruit and vegetables. Mm. And when you live in a world like that, and there's a fast food restaurant on every corner, and, you know, there's more pressure than ever to make a living and spend our life staring at these four walls and looking at these electronic screens, there's so much pressure to listen, to give into that impulse, that it's very, very difficult without some very powerful, simplistic separation like that to develop the instinctual feeling to resist. You can write it out and, you know, plan it all you want, but if you don't have that instinctual separation where you suddenly feel almost disgusted with that other part of yourself, then it's very difficult to resist. And I think that's why this works. I think that we're just, we live in a culture where industry is pushing our evolutionary buttons. And then the treatment industry says that, you know, you're really powerless to resist. You can only abstain one day at a time. And, you know, and they're throwing all this advertising at you. I think we need something really powerful to get through that. And then once you have that new pattern in place, it becomes progressively easier to resist. But so that's how Never Binge Again was born. By the way, that's my book, which is available in Kindle format or Nook format. And if you go to neverbingeagain.com, that'll give you the links to Amazon and Barnes & Noble to pick it up. It's also available in paperback, but the Kindle and Nook format are completely free.
That's awesome.
There's one more element of it. The other piece of this has to do with the mindset of commitment. In our culture, like I said, people tend to try things out for a little while. Like I think I'll try paleo this week, or I think I'll, you know, try 80-10-10 this week, or some particular diet, or I'll try to avoid chocolate. But that's not really how this works. This is more like the mindset of a competitive athlete. And if you talk to competitive athletes who really achieve tremendous goals, climbing a mountain, finishing a marathon, or even like a little kid you're trying to coach to ride their bicycle to the top of a hill, what you want to help them do is visualize the goal, visualize themselves victorious at the finish line, and then purge all doubt and uncertainty, the possibility of failure, purge that all from their mind so they can only concentrate on the victory, because the doubt and uncertainty and fear only serve to channel their energies in destructive ways. It distracts them from channeling all of their energy towards the goal. And that's how people succeed at major goals. And so we have to have a 100% commitment to whatever rule we adopt. So if I say, I will never eat chocolate again, then what I really mean is I've become a person who never eats chocolate. It's a statement of character. And you believe it as strongly as you would if you made a marital vow. So I've never heard this marital vow at a wedding, Lynette. I don't know if you have, but nobody says, you know, I'm about 90% certain I can be faithful to you forever. But I got to be honest, there sure are a lot of attractive people out there. And, you know, I don't think anybody could promise to do it forever. And you want me to be honest, don't you? So that's not a marital vow. You wouldn't marry that guy, right?
Right. You know, I just get so frustrated that there's no, I'm a very busy person. And so for me to plan, to shop, to cook, to clean, I need to be able to pick food up. And I get so frustrated. And then to ruin it all, I just found out that there's salt and sugar in sushi. I did not know that. They said, well, how do you think the rice gets sticky? I don't know. I mean, all the healthy people are eating sushi. I assumed brown rice, sushi, I'm good to go. And they said there's sugar and salt in the sushi rice.
There is so much garbage in everything. It's unbelievable.
It's so frustrating because, you know, I live at the shore in New Jersey, and so there's restaurants everywhere. And it's amazing how few items you can actually pick up. I mean, really, what is the big deal to have a couple items on your menu that aren't grilled chicken? I'm so sick of grilled chicken.
It's hard to find genuinely healthy restaurants. Even a lot of restaurants that are advertised as healthy, you still have to kind of query them around how much sodium and sugar and everything are in the food. So,
oh, absolutely. Even the grilled chicken, you know, they're putting a bunch of salt on that before they grill it.
Yep.
Okay. So Glenn, let me ask you this. You made a big decision in your life, I feel, to kind of add this coaching into your career. Did you have any hesitations or challenges transitioning into that? Because I know that there's a lot of listeners out there who have personal experiences, and some of those listeners are already coaches. Some other listeners may want to get into coaching because something has happened to them that they're passionate about. So did you have any hesitations? I know you said that you follow a different rubric. You're under coaching. You're wearing your coaching hat rather than your doctor hat.
That's a really good question. And I do run a coach training organization. And let me just kind of clarify how that all happened. So originally, I was a marital and family therapist. And I didn't take people who specifically came to me for the purpose of eating disorders because I felt that I had one and I wasn't clear of it yet. So I didn't feel like it was ethical to take people and work with them directly on the eating disorder. I work mostly with couples and families and then with a lot of adolescent children of those couples and families. And then what would happen would be a lot of those people, you know, I would see people after an affair, and 6 months, a year, sometimes 2 years after working through everything that happened, sometimes the people would want to continue to work with me. And I said, well, I can't legitimately really keep putting this diagnosis on your insurance form, and you're saying you want to work with me to accomplish XYZ goal. That's really more coaching than psychotherapy. And I don't feel right about, you know, putting you into psychotherapy and keeping notes on you and a medical chart. Why don't you come into my coaching practice and we'll work with you as a coaching client? And that's how I started to transition into coaching. And, you know, people tend to expect to pay direct for coaching, whereas they expect to have insurance reimbursement for, you know, psychotherapeutic treatment. And so it was more attractive to me. It was more attractive to me over time. I would still occasionally have a patient or two, and every now and then someone will call me still for a psychotherapeutic issue. But I gravitated towards that. And since we don't have kids and we don't commute, we had, as I mentioned, very diverse careers. And so with the other 40 hours a week, we developed a marketing consulting practice, mostly for big companies. And way down the road, I'm going to fast forward way down the road, you know, 20 years later, I asked myself, Sharon and I asked ourselves, where could we have the most impact on the world? And one of the places was with Never Binge Again. And that's, you know, where my heart and my soul is in terms of the personal issue that's most important to me. But the other place was in helping coaches who had their own passions to learn how to market their practice and to impart more coaching skills. And so we developed a whole coach training organization. Since we have a real reputation for not only helping Fortune 500 companies, but helping individuals to develop niches and market within niches. And we previously, in that intervening 20 years, we owned an online advertising agency. We have a lot of marketing knowledge, and we just kind of felt like it all came together. We should help the helper. Let's train coaches to market their passion, just like I'm marketing Never Binge Again.
It makes perfect sense because you both are in emotional marketing, and coaching is an emotional field.
Coaching is a very emotional field, yes.
Right. Yes. What do you think through your travels of dealing with your own weight and now coaching people and all of that? What do you think you've learned about yourself?
Oh, boy. I have learned so much about myself. You know, I think one of the most important things is that money matters. You can't ignore it, but it's really not that important. It's only important if you ignore it. But if I had it to do over again, there are a lot of projects. I think I would have exited the corporate consulting a lot sooner. I think that it stopped me from working on things that could have been more meaningful, you know, projects like Never Binge Again. I think that I had something to prove way back when. I come from a family of 17 psychologists and psychotherapists and counselors and social workers. And I felt like I wanted to be the first guy that wasn't just a country doctor. And I wanted to be able to prove that I was going to be able to succeed in business. And it was kind of a waste of time. And I think I proved it. But I mean, and I guess I'm glad that I have these skills and now I can help other people with it. But in retrospect, there was a decade or so that I feel like I wasted my energy trying to be a big shot and having a jet set corporate lifestyle and, you know, having to fly to Tokyo and back for a 1-hour meeting. And that took a lot out of me that didn't give me all that much back. And there are some of the corporations that I helped that I kind of wish that I didn't help.
You know what though, Glenn, I'm such a believer in the fact that everything we do leads us to the next thing. And I just feel like your experience with your weight led you to be able to help people with their weight. Your experience, like you're saying, this 10 years, I mean, of course, your experiences, your skills, and all of those things you're utilizing, I'm sure, now in what you're doing, and just how it changed your perspective on life, how you had to travel through it to appreciate more where you're at, you know?
I couldn't be the person that I am now if I hadn't gone through all
right.
the things that we did.
Glenn, for everybody out there who may be having issues with their diet or their weight or their perspective on food, was there a resource that was helpful to you?
Well, there are a number of them, actually. So other than my book, I think they should read Jack Trimpe's book on rational recovery. I think that's an essential. I think there's a book called Addiction is a Choice. It's a little bit old at this point, but it goes over the studies that will surprise you with regards to how much control addicts really have as compared to what's put forth in our culture. And then there is a book by Dr. Kessler called The End of Overeating, which will help you understand just how much sugar, salt, and fat is all around you and kind of wake up to what you might be putting in your body that you don't know you're putting in your body.
Okay, so this part of the show is called Motivate Me, Express to Success, because I believe to get anybody to act, you need to first envision it for yourself and then explore what it would take and then envision a plan. So if we're talking about gaining control of your perspective on food, right? Uh-huh. If I want to envision myself having that control, what can I see for myself?
Well, what I ask people to do is to think of a very specific rule they might want to follow first. Like what's your single worst food craving or trigger behavior? And then when you have that, ask yourself, well, if you were to never give into that again, or if you were to put a very specific condition that you know would control it, and you followed that for a year, what do you envision your life would look like a year from now? Would you be different physically? Would you have lost some weight? Would you have more energy? What are the, but not just the physical numbers, but what are the implications of that? What would you do that you're not doing now because you're uncomfortable in your body? How would you relate to others? Most people, as they lose weight, they tell me that they feel more present in their relationships with others, and they have more confidence, and they're more assertive, and like really go into all of the details. See if you can visualize a day in the life of yourself 1 year from now if you never had chocolate again, or whatever your rule might be.
To explore it for themselves then.
Well, I recommend that people actually write this down. They actually write in a little journal and, you know, draw a line down the middle of the page, and on the left-hand side, this is what my life will look like in a year if I follow this. And then on the right-hand side, this is what my life will look like if I keep doing what I'm doing.
And then to execute a plan, that first step, I think one of the things that you said is make the decision.
Mm-hmm.
Draw that line in the sand.
I will never eat chocolate again, or will only ever eat chocolate on Saturdays again.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so what closing advice would you give everybody?
While you're thinking about it, write down what your single worst food craving might be and what one rule might have a dramatic impact on your life if you were willing to adopt it.
It was funny. Today I had my exercise class. Today was the end of our 10-week challenge. So she went around the room and asked everybody, you know, what did you get out of this 10-week challenge? Because it's a very rigorous 5-day-a-week program. And so, you know, the answers were great. You know, I feel healthy. I feel strong. I have clarity, you know, and my answer was actually agility. I'm ready to get up and go. You know what I'm saying? And I just feel more agile.
That's fabulous.
So Glenn, let's get your contact information.
Well, you know, the two best places to get me would be at neverbingeagain.com. There's a contact button there, and I get that directly. Or if you're interested in coaching, go to thecoachingtest.com, thecoachingtest.com. And that's for people who are considering becoming a coach or might like to work with us in the marketing training. And it gives you a little assessment. It's free, and a customized report to examine the elements of a coaching career that you would need to attend to. So it's thecoachingtest.com or neverbingeagain.com. That's the best way to get a hold of me.
Okay. And can I make you a part of our private group, Motivate Me Ultimate Support System, in case anybody would like to get in touch with you that way?
Sure.
I want to thank you for coming on the show, and I want to thank you for sharing some very personal thoughts and how you've managed this in your own life and how you've kind of transitioned from all of your degrees to, you know, moving into something that's so super meaningful to you. Because I know there's plenty of people out there who are listening right now and they're thinking, you know, this is what matters most to me. And I don't want to waste another year doing something that's not as meaningful.
Absolutely. I enjoyed this, Lynn. Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. So everybody, here's your go-do. Right now, today, you need to go out and make the decision to nix one thing from your diet that you know is bringing you down. That's the end of the show. Thank you so much. You motivate me. I'm Lynette Renda.